You're listening to Loving BDSM Podcast, episode 134. Okay, the Lord's here with the one, the only, the dude in a squeaky chair, John Brownstone. We really need to get you a new chair.
I know, but I've had this chair for so long. It's so comfortable. It's form-fitted to me.
You mean it's molded to your butt?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're doing a show. This week, we're taking on kind of a difficult topic that people will likely have very strong opinions on. The how, why, and when of raising sex-positive, kink-friendly kids.
Ah.
Welcome to the Loving BDSM Podcast. If this is your first time listening, glad to have you. If you're back for another week, welcome back. Loving BDSM is produced every Friday for your kinky pleasure and education, and show notes are found at lovingbdsm.net. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite podcast app. If you love what you hear, we'd love a good review wherever you listen to us to help other kinksters find us. You can follow the show on Twitter, at lovingbdsm, on FetLife at lovingbdsmpc, or on Instagram, that handle I hate, LovingDS and the number one, LovingDS1. All links are in the show notes. You know, you're sighing at me very early in the episode.
I know.
So I have a couple of announcements to make.
Okay.
Before you start sighing anymore.
Oh, boy.
One, if I sound a little funny, it's because I have some, like, sinus drips something going on, and it keeps getting, like, The back of my throat keeps getting clogged up.
You're sick the day before we're leaving for vacation.
I know, we're going on vacation for a week. I've got a head cold.
That's going to be fun.
Other than, you know, truly, other than being exhausted because I've been working long hours and a slight sore throat, I don't feel bad. I just sound like it. So I think it probably will come across through on my my voice. It might be noticeable, so I figured I'd say something up top. And then, yes, since we are going on vacation, there will be no episode next Friday, which I believe my numbers are right. That's June 22nd. Y'all know how I am about numbers. Every time I have to give out a date, I give out the wrong damn number. Yes, June 22nd. There will be no episode. I know. I think I did my research before I put my notes together. I think I actually went and looked at a calendar.
Wow.
And, I know. We do have a bonus section.
Yes.
At the end, because we got mail. Yay.
Yep.
And we got some, like, stuff that we've talked about with some people, but not the, like, big group of people, so we're gonna just a little stuff, but yeah, so there's this topic, and I will admit it started out as I call it a rant, but it wasn't a rant. I was just very, I had a thing to say on Twitter and about raising kids with some amount of sex education from home, because you can't rely on school, and about how I talk to the kids, and I use the 12-year-old, I'll say that right, as the subject of that Twitter thread thing that I did, because with him, I can be very, I feel like I could be very straightforward at this point. Like, I use language with him that I don't use with the 8-year-old.
True.
The 8-year-old, we still, when we're talking about body parts, we talk and, you know, I tell them the right words. And when they're sitting at the table giggling over the word nuts or balls, I'm like, we use the correct word and they know those words. But some of the ways that I talk about stuff with the 8-year-old is a little bit different than with the 12-year-old because of the age appropriateness and my comfort level and his comfort level and all that stuff. But it got me thinking about how we have in the past, I think it's episode 46. I know it's linked in the show notes if anybody wants to go listen to it. We did an episode on parenting and kink, but that was mostly to talk about and sort of answer the question that I still get even now of, how do you parent and be a kinkster? How is that even possible? And we've talked about that. And we talk about that, really, if you think about it, it's kind of in the thread of a lot of episodes we talk about, because the kids are a part of our life. So we mention that we have
kids.
Very big
part of our lives.
Well, yeah, kind of, you know, the majority. I'm not counting down for another 10 years till that 8-year-old's an 18-year-old, whatever. I think in that episode, we did sort of, part of the conversation was a bit of our philosophy on how to talk to your kids and the importance of talking to your kids. But I wanted to give it its own episode because it is such a huge topic. And the response I got on Twitter was, first of all positive. I was very fortunate. No trolls, nothing like that. It was all positive. But it was such a big response. I was kind of surprised. I thought, I'm just throwing this out here to sort of just say this thing. And next thing I know, everybody's like, yeah, yeah, woo! And I'm like, oh, I can't cheer. My throat won't let me. I was like, oh, no, I just thought I was over here, you know, being the anxious parent that we all are, you know. I'm just like every other parent. I'm really worried I'm fucking up my kids. But guess what I'm not worried about fucking them up on? Sex.
And that's important. That's a good thing.
Well, and here's how I think of it. I think of it in multiple terms. So we all come at this in different ways and from different backgrounds. And some people, because I've talked to them online, some people were very fortunate that their parents were very open with them.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. I think that's awesome. And I hope that in 20 or 30 years, my kid's sitting around and telling other people, yeah, my parents were really like weirdly open about this stuff, right? Maybe he'll forget all the embarrassment he feels now. But right now, all he really feels is embarrassment. At least the oldest one does. But so I came at it from, I think what's really the common thing of, I was raised in a house where we did not talk about sex. It was, even when it was asked about point blank, I was shut down every time.
And it was the same for me.
I really think that's probably the most common thing.
Yeah, it was the same thing for me.
And so I was 32 before I figured out my own sexuality and the fact that I'm kinky. And so my thinking on it is, one, there's a lot of things that my parents did. They loved me very much. They tried very hard. There's a lot of things they did. I don't want to be that way. That is one of them. But two, I don't want my children to be 30-something before they figure out their sexuality.
Like, yeah.
And not because, I mean, I think that sexuality is something that can blossom and sort of burgeon over time. And as you discover more about yourself, maybe you discover things you didn't know. But that's not what I mean. I mean, I was pretty much sexually repressed. I had like a summer where I just lost it. And I was fucking anybody who'd look at me cross-eyed. That was a great summer. And then something, guilt hit, I think. I've not looked too much at that. So I can't really psychoanalyze myself right now. But I know that I felt guilty. I felt like I was doing something wrong. And I put a lid on that shit. And I stayed that way. And even when I was sexually, like, highly sexually active at 18, I didn't masturbate. I didn't orgasm. I didn't. It wasn't about my sexual pleasure. It was about the person, the guy I was having sex with pleasure. But I enjoyed that. Like, I really. Oh, that was a horny, horny summer. oh, my God. It was so good. But I don't want that for my kids. What I want them to do is go, shit, stuff's happening. And, oh, my mom told me this. And I'd love, like, my dream is that my kids will actually come talk to me about this stuff. I know there's no guarantee about it. I figure if I just keep telling them over and over and over again, you can ask me anything. You can tell me anything. Right. If I say it often enough, maybe they'll believe me. The 12-year-old totally believes me because he asks me some of the deepest questions.
Yes, he does. He does.
He asks me literally anything that's on his mind. And every once in a while, that's sexual. He's right on the cusp. Like, I think we got max one more year before he goes over the deep end of the teenage hormones and all that stuff.
Right.
So hopefully by the time he does, he really will believe he can ask us about anything. I mean, I do tell him, because I know he looks at me, he's like, oh my God, you're my mom. You're my mom, and you're talking to me about this. And I do point out to him that he can go talk to you too.
Right.
And, you know, maybe if he needs a guy's perspective, you know, that's who he should talk to.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit. I agree. They need to understand. They need early. I mean, I grew up, my folks did not want to talk about it, same as yours. Sex education in school when I was a kid was pretty much, don't do it.
I had something a little bit more comprehensive, but that was the main message, don't do it.
So, you know, I wasn't getting any education at home, nothing at school.
Right.
And, this totally predates,
internet porn.
Internet porn,
which is how the kids are learning about it these days.
Well,
right?
I mean, you know, we had microfiche in our library. That's.
Did you have microfiche porn? I bet that's out there somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Some kinky librarian has microfiche porn. I need to know about this.
You know, the way I learned, I'm surprised I am the way I am, but I made a hell of a lot of mistakes along the way because, you know, everything was just what was talked about in between friends.
Right, which is always pretty misinformed.
Exactly.
It's always really bad.
You know, if we were lucky enough to get our hands on a Penthouse or a Hustler magazine.
See, and the kids today just need a phone that's not blocked massively by their parents, quite frankly.
Now, you know, I will say, and unfortunately it's probably not, doesn't happen as often as it should. You know, at least with with the internet these days, there are places like Scarlet Teen.
Right, and even Planned Parenthood has a great informational side to their site.
So, you know, at least there are some good resources out there for kids, even if they're not.
Right, if you can get the kids to read it. Because the reality is why this is so important for a lot of reasons. So I'll bring it back to, if you are listening, you are at the minimum kink-friendly, but most likely a kinkster on some level. And I don't have hard numbers because I am not a scientist. I will leave this to researchers. But I know that it is common for many of us to, especially if you were older when you sort of discovered your kinky side. I know because I have them reach out to me usually when they turn 18.
Yeah.
I know there are teenagers and young people out there who are figuring out very early that they're kinky. I know people who are my age or your age today who knew when they were younger. And I think that's really cool. I kind of can't imagine it. And I hope that helps them in their journey. Because to be repressed for a long time is certainly
not a good thing.
Has its baggage.
Been there, done that.
Right? and I did not get a t-shirt.
No.
But, you know, the people I talk to the most are people who couldn't either face it or didn't deal with how they felt, or even though they recognized their feelings at a young age, there was all this guilt, there was all this angst of, oh my gosh, is something wrong with me? Oh my gosh, am I mentally ill? Am I a deviant? What am I doing? You know, there are these sometimes negative feelings because BDSM and kink are highly misunderstood, and until you really learn about it, you don't know. And I just think, I think to those of you who are parents out there, put yourself in your kid's place. Even if they're an adult. I mean, I get not wanting to go into the ins and outs of BDSM with your teenager. I totally get that. But don't you want them to know that there's a place they can, a person that they can trust to talk to about, I think this thing is happening and I don't understand it. And that's why, to me, it's important that, one, I talk to my kids now about what I know they need to know. And I'm no expert. I'm sure there are things I'm missing, but good God, I'm still better than nothing. And two, if I instill in them now a positivity about sex, an idea that as long as it's consensual, you can, whatever it is, it's not wrong. And desperately try to get them to believe they really can't come talk to me about anything, then maybe if they realize there's some, you know, some things going on in their sexuality or their desires that they don't understand, they'll be armed with good information. And even if they don't come talk to me, they might know at that point who they can go talk to. Or if nothing else, they might go, Mom, where can I go look this up? Don't talk to me. Don't look me in the eyes. Just where can I go look it up? And they won't necessarily. Now, you can't prevent all bad things from happening. We all know that. But why would I purposefully put them in a position that I am very familiar with, because it's the same position I was in? So that, you know, from parent to parent, if you are a parent or want to be a parent or plan to be a parent, I'm never going to tell another parent how to parent their children, how to raise their children. We all have to do what we feel is best. But if we could convince you that the conversation is worth having, at the bare minimum, the first one would be so that they never feel like you felt, if all you felt when you discovered kink was guilt and worry. And you didn't know who to turn to, and you didn't know what resources, and you didn't have even a clue because you didn't even have the language for talking about these things. Like, that's what you're giving your kids. Maybe they never come to you and ask you about spankings or bondage, but if you give them the language to know how to ask the right questions of other people,
excuse me,
that's a valuable skill too. And you've done your part, and you may never know their kinky sex lives, and that's fine too. I look at my children now and go, I want you to have the sexual relationships, the romantic relationships, the partnerships that fulfill you and make you happy. I hope you have good sex. I hope you're good men with whomever you partner mm-hmm. with. But I really don't want to know the details. I would never tell them that. But in my head, I'm like, no, I don't. I'm good. If we never talk about mm-hmm. the details, I really am good. The other thing is, and like I said, I'm not a sex ed expert. I will never bill myself as that, especially when we're talking about kids. But I'm paying attention as a parent. I'm trying to educate myself as a parent. And so what I do know, after having read just a little bit of stuff, consistently, we know that young people, when they want to know about sex, especially now when it's all at their fingertips, they go to porn first.
Right.
And we are already a show that says, please stop learning your BDSM from porn.
Yeah.
So why would we want our kids to learn sex from porn? I don't think that's a good idea. If any of you out there learned your BDSM first from porn and you realized, oh, that was not the way to go. Yes, exactly. And so we don't want that for mm-hmm. our children. So the why of doing it, there are a million and one reasons why, to keep them safe. If you have the proper, ignorance doesn't keep anybody safe.
No.
Not knowing does not, that actually to me, and I'm sure experts might even have like real data behind this, ignorance makes you vulnerable.
It does.
I mean, if you don't have the language, then you don't know. And if somebody claims to tell you something and you don't know what's real and what isn't because somebody you trust hasn't told you something. I mean, it's I would not, I'm not going to like go all, you know, the Chicken Little and Sky's Fallen. I'm not saying that it's so inherently dangerous you're doing damage to your child. But I will say that in my family, we didn't talk about sex, and I was 32 before I orgasmed. I don't think I'm damaged, but I'm thinking that wasn't good.
No.
So,
well,
don't leave your kids in ignorance either.
No. Yeah.
You lost your thread.
No, I didn't. I was debating whether to tell this story or not.
Oh, you're debating whether to tell the story. Yeah. Uh-oh. Must be a good one. It's about me?
No, about me.
Oh, when so I was, it's really when I was
about
personal. 12,
when I was about 12, 13 years old.
I will tell you right now, mm-hmm. I will forgive 12 or 13-year-old John Brownstone anything.
Mm, well,
you can tell any
this,
story.
This is, well, okay. When I believe I was around 12, 13, you know, the whole raging hormone thing.
I can imagine.
At that point. And I woke up one morning and found out I had my first wet dream.
Oh, wow. How did that, as somebody who has never, I know women can have them, but I've mm-hmm. never had one. How the first one, like, what's the thought going in through your head?
I was scared as hell. I didn't know, I had no clue what had happened.
Oh, no. I'm going to put wet dreams on the list of things to talk to, mm-hmm. that you need to talk to the 12-year-old about.
And I was terrified. I went to my mom.
I've met your mom. I can make so many guesses and none of them are good.
Yeah. Her response is, strip the bed and never let this happen again.
Right. Turn off your biology now, please. Just don't be human.
So, you know, that's why even to me, it's important that they...
Absolutely.
They understand because, you know, the not talking about it and
the acting like it's a bad thing. Like that's the, to me, that's the worst thing because as kinksters, we already know that there are people who look at what we do and think what we do is a bad thing because they don't understand it. It would absolutely break my heart if my children at any age, adults or otherwise, had a natural sexual experience and mm-hmm. thought that they had done something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, wrong is not getting consent. Wrong is, you know, breaking the law to do something. But having your body respond in the natural way that your body is sort of built to respond.
Mm-hmm.
I think every one of us, even if it didn't happen to us, we know somebody who could easily go, oh, let me tell you the nightmare of my childhood and sex and puberty and... And I can't prevent all that. I'm sure even when you explain to him or I explain to him what these are, the first time it happens, it's probably still going to freak him out. I'll give you an example that's not about actual like reproductive sex part. Well, yeah, it is. A period is the shedding of the lining. But my first mm-hmm. period, I knew what my period was when I got it, right?
Right.
I was not surprised by it. I was surprised by it, but I wasn't like shocked. I didn't think I was dying or anything. Now, let me backtrack. I was 9 when I got my first period.
Okay.
9 years old. I was 8 when I started wearing bras. 9, I got my period and started shaving my legs. Oh, I hit puberty, like hit the ground running at a very early age. So at 9, I knew what a period was. My mother had never hidden that for me. I understood the concept. I knew what pads were. I had had, I was very fortunate in the late 80s, early 90s. That part of Florida still at least offered sex education. By today's standards of, now I don't want to mean educational standards, but like sex expert and sex educators and the sex community online, by those standards, it was still pretty shitty. But it was better than nothing. And so that even reiterated for me, okay, this is what a pad is. And this is what, you know, this is how you handle it when you have your period. So when I got my period, I did not think I was dying. I did not think that there was something wrong with me.
Yeah.
Two things happened. One, I was like, well, I hurt. I had cramps that first time. And that's what woke me up. And so that scared me because you can hear about a cramp, but it's different until you feel it, right?
Yeah.
And that would set me on a lifelong journey of awful, awful periods and cramps that were debilitating. Yay. And my mother looked at me and went, I am so sorry. And that is all she ever said about my period. And that's not to knock my mother. My mother is, for the life she led and what she knew and how things were handled at this point, she did the best she could. Of course, I can criticize her now. Hindsight's 2020. And I can laugh about it now. But I also recognize that was part of it. That was all she really said about it. She always made sure I had pads. She always made sure, you know, she helped me through some of this stuff. You know, we could talk and laugh about it and complain about it. It's got to be strange my mom would have been 28 when I was 9. That was probably not the bonding experience she thought she'd have with her 9-year-old.
Yeah.
That you could both joke about your cramps. but... those were the kinds of things. It wasn't like anybody sat me down and went, okay, this is natural. And, you know, I understood it, thankfully, because she had been open about it. So I knew it happened.
Right.
And because school taught me that this is what was happening, I understood that. But there was still none of this, like, let me sit down with you and talk about these things.
Yeah. Now,
I will be very, very forthright for all my friends out there who have daughters or and have to raise children that deal with periods. This is the moment I'm so glad I have boys. So fucking glad I have boys. Because I really always wondered, oh, how would I handle that conversation? I probably would bitch a little bit because sometimes it just sucks and I would never pretend otherwise. But again, going back to that, I want to do better than my parents.
Right.
I'd like to think I'd do more than that. I'd love to hear from anybody out there who has children who can have their periods and who you've had to deal with it already or you've started dealing with it already. Because that's the other thing. Waiting until you're in the middle of it. Like, if we don't tell him about wet dreams until after his first wet dream, that's too late.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the reason he keeps asking me, the 12-year-old, why are you telling me about sex now? I am not interested in having sex right now. I'm like, I know. But if I wait till you're ready to have sex, it's too late. You've already formed ideas about it. We've got to have these conversations now. So that's the other thing that I would never tell somebody, oh, you have to start talking to your kids at this age or that age. I'm not doing all that. But I do think, I do believe personally that earlier is better. And you can speak in very age-appropriate words. Some kids are just curious. And if you, I have children who are not curious about those things. I had to force the conversation on them when I felt like they could handle the information. Because they were not coming to me and saying, mommy, how does a baby get in your tummy? The 12-year-old was 4 when I was pregnant with his brother, and I have not had any more children since. And so he kind of went, there is a baby in there? And this was pre age 32 masturbation, orgasms, kink discovery. This was when I was still sexually repressed. So I mostly went, yes. And your dad helped put the baby in there and the baby will come out soon enough. And didn't act like it was magical and a stork was coming, but I certainly didn't get into mechanics, right?
Yeah.
I didn't even really have the language at the time. But so by the time I did have the language, they were not asking those questions. They have never been curious about, not with me anyway. So I had to force those conversations on them. But some people will have curious children who just ask questions.
True.
And what I have found on other topics that my kids ask about, like the 12-year-old asks me about politics.
And yes.
Now, granted, at 12, nearly 13, next month he will be 13, I can have more straightforward conversations with him, but he's been asking me deep questions since he was like 7 or 8.
And yes, he, yes.
Yeah, he's just a deep thinker. Yes. So I have always tried to, as best I can, I do not get it right all the time, God knows, just I answer as forthrightly as I can in age-appropriate terms. So if you've got a curious kid who's asking about sex or asking about, you know, things that make your whole body turn beet red because you are mortified, my recommendation is that you don't shy away from it, and you can answer those things in age-appropriate terms. One of the things I put on my list of notes to make sure that I recognize this in myself, so I know it's true for other people, you are going to stumble through those conversations. You're not going to know the right words to say. I struggle to talk to the boys about sexuality and gender because I want them to grow up to be a good ally. Well, we're not, I don't know if the youngest one, he has never said one way or the other where his preferences lie. The oldest is like, I'm straight, mom, I'm straight. I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever. So I want him to be a good ally. But right. I have to learn these things before I feel like I can talk to him about these things. Mm-hmm. But it's not that I don't talk about them. It's that I really do fumble through, you know, some of these conversations where I don't have the language and I don't have the experience and I don't have the knowledge really to do a good job of talking about, talking about them in detail. Because at his age, I can talk about them in detail.
True.
With the little one, it's mostly like anybody can love anybody they want. There is no right way. You can love more than one person. You know, again, very general terms. I think a lot of people think when you start talking about, excuse me, head cold. When you start talking about sex with your kids, and I'll get into talking about kink with your kids because I've found a couple really cool ways to do that. They think you're supposed to like start really getting graphic with them, and you really, until you feel like your kid is ready, and that will be before you feel like you're ready, I think, you don't have to get graphic.
Yeah, and you don't. And while you were talking there, I had a thought too. You know, early on when we first got together, you know, the boys were fairly young, and they were going through a pretty hefty wrestling stage.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Yeah, remember that? Yes. When they were constantly wrestling with each other. And, you know, many times, no, stop.
Yeah, I heard and that all the time.
That, to me, was an opportunity to talk about consent.
Absolutely. That was the easiest way to start talking about consent at a very young age.
You know, not in a sexual manner, but in a context of teaching them at that point, boys, when someone is saying no, you know, that means you stop. You know, that means no. You know, that was an opportunity to start teaching them that.
And very, very frequently are the things we would, because, you know, if you've got children of any gender, it doesn't matter. You know you're shouting the same things over and over again.
Right. And so reinforcement.
You know, one of the things we, for a few years, really, and even now, but much less so, that we were constantly shouting was, we do not touch people who do not want to be touched.
Yeah.
If somebody tells you to take your hands off of them, you take your hands off of them. But I would be standing in the kitchen, and I could hear what they were doing, and I didn't have to see it. I go, we do not touch people who do not want to be touched.
Right.
And so now, what's funny, when I was quizzing the 12-year-old the other day. We got into what started the Twitter rant as a conversation I got into with the 12-year-old, which is, here we are at this episode now, right? And we were talking, he's learned, he does not like to look at my screen, my laptop screen, because he really doesn't know what he's going to see. And now that he's older, I'm a little bit more honest with him. I used to just say, oh, it's grown-up stuff. But now I'll tell him, you're going to see sex toys if you look at my screen. He's like, I'm not looking at your screen. Okay. And so he came up to give me a hug, and he said, I'm trying not to look at your screen because I'm sure I don't want to look at your screen. And I was actually reading a Twitter thread about how virginity is a social construct, which that for me is a relatively new concept.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense the moment I heard it. Virginity is this thing we make up. I believe in having language, and so you need words to describe things. So I understand in that sense the kind of the value in the term virginity, so you can easily say, oh, that person hasn't had sex, so that's what it's supposed to mean. But virginity has been, especially with women, it's this valuable thing. It's a prize. It's worth, I mean, in history, it's worth money, you know? So it's not just this way of describing who's had sex and who hasn't. And it's not good. And it's not necessarily something that we need to certainly be celebrating because, you know, what, you're either a virgin or a slut. That's not going to work. So what I told him was, no, you can look at it. It's just a Twitter thread, and I'm reading about how, and this is what I said, virginity is a social construct. And he, if he'd been Scooby-Doo, it would have been a, whoo, like, right. Huh? And I said, well, do you know what virginity is? And he goes, yeah, when you haven't had sex. So then I started explaining about how over years and years and years, like one part of the thread I read was talking about medieval times, and another part was talking about how it was really ancient times. But basically, a female body's virginity had a price tag attached to it. And if you wanted to make a good marriage, you had to maintain this virginity. And I'm telling you this stuff, and I'm telling you about how it's kind of a myth that when you have sex with somebody who's got a vulva for the first time, that there's probably gonna be blood everywhere. And he looked at me and his eyes got huge. I said, there is not blood everywhere. Can bleeding occur? Yes. Usually it means you went too fast and you didn't get her ready. And what I said was, you didn't get her ready. And he looked at me and I was like, is this the moment we talk about natural lubrication? Sometimes you have to pick your moments, is my point to that part. So that conversation led into virginity. And as any parent, there's the thing I want him to do. And then there's the realistic side of what he's probably going to do.
Yeah.
But I'm not afraid to tell him what I want him to do. I'm his mom, and he's still only 12. I said, look, the day you have sex for the first time, I said, and you will hear that commonly referred to as losing your virginity. He said, lose it? Where'd it go? I said, I know. That's why we don't like that term is falling out of favor, because it's not a thing to have. It's a state of being. You either have had sex for the first time or you have not. I stopped to say, not all sex is penetrative. So you can fool around with your hand or your mouth or other ways, and that's still sex. And he's like, and he doesn't know any better. So he doesn't have these social concepts like we do.
Right.
That, you know, young people, I remember being in high school convincing people that blowjobs were not sex. You know, oral sex wasn't sex. Hand jobs weren't sex. The only, quote, sex was penetration.
Correct.
And that's how a lot of us have been taught.
That was the thought, frame of thought for a long time.
Exactly. So many of us as adults, especially in the kink space, when, you know, if you venture out of doing your kink thing beyond just your relationship, and I don't mean like getting kinky with other people, but I mean like going out into the community or reading or following people or listening to podcasts, you open yourself up to a lot more information. And many of us are hearing more and more and more about, you know, how to define sex and like this, you know, how to define virginity and all of these things. So we're having to reteach ourselves, and we're having to switch our thinking, and it takes time, and there's resistance, not to the concept, but because it is such a shift in how you've always looked at things. But he doesn't have any of that. What, at this point, for probably not that much longer, I recognize it, all he knows about sex is mostly what I've told him.
Correct.
So when I say things to him like, you know, fingering a girl, stroking a person's penis, whatever, because I do use gendered language, because that is the thing I'm having to reteach myself. For all my friends out there who are not loving that, I get it, but just I'm doing the best I can. But that's not something he has to unlearn. He's like, oh, okay, all that sex? Okay. So then lead to the next part of this conversation where I'm like, look, here's what I want to happen. What I want to happen is for you to not have sex until you are an adult, and that that's a committed relationship of some kind. I'm not talking about marriage, it's girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever you're dating. I want it to be somebody you care about. That's what I want. Right. I don't want it to be this fumbled thing in the back of something. I said, however, that's what I want for you because I'm your mom and that's my job to want that. Here's the reality. You are likely going to have sex way earlier than I think you should. And it's probably going to be some weird fumbly thing where y'all didn't really know what you were doing, but it felt good at the time.
Right.
I said, I know that. I said, I'm not going to be mad at you if that's what happens. I said, because here's what I care about most. You get consent of your partner. You use protection. I said, and you need to think about protection. It's not just the other person's job. I said, and if you're not grown enough grown up enough to have a conversation about the fact that you're about to have sex or you just had sex, you're not grown up enough for sex. So be damn sure you can have a conversation about it with this person. I said, and at whatever age that happens, that's what happens. Now, I know there are parents out there who are probably rolling right now because they can imagine a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old having sex. And I get that. And some of that can be dangerous. And it is my job as a parent to do my best to watch over my kids to make sure that they're not with predatory people. Or like, I get that. But the reality is if I act like sex is something that they need, I'm going to be mad at them for, there's only one right time or only one right way to do it, I'm just guaranteed they're going to do it first in probably a really shitty situation. You know? I mean, that's pretty much, once you make it taboo, then it's like, oh, it's this thing I got to sneak around about and I can't talk about. And, you know, something bad does happen, I can't talk to my mom because my mom, you know what I mean? So if I'm open about it, then hopefully he'll be open about it. But what we did do is we also practiced. And when I say practiced, I mean we verbally practiced what consent looks like and sounds like. Because I said to him, I said, consent is not your partner not saying no to you. Consent is not, if I said, if you walk away and you go, well, they didn't push me away, that's not consent. Right. I said, consent is a yes. Consent is enthusiastic. Consent is no doubt in your mind that that person was into it with you. Correct. I said, and when in doubt, you ask. I said, so what would you do if your partner, you didn't see, like said something or kind of like, he goes, I would stop. Yeah, of course. And I'm thinking, I know it's easy for him to say now at 12 when it's not really happening. Yeah. But if he can say it now at 12 when it's not really happening, maybe some of that'll sink into his brain.
Right.
Like,
right.
I don't think I'm raising a perfect child. I don't think that he'll never fuck this up. I mean, we are all humans.
We all make mistakes.
We all fuck up our sex lives at some point. We just do. But you know what? If he has that little voice in his head that goes, wait, something's not right here, and he knows he's supposed to listen to that, then maybe we have better outcomes. And if more of us would talk to our boys about that,
right,
then maybe we could, like, really could make a better world. Because truly, if you can get to them before their friends get to them about sex, I really
much
think
better
you've,
place. Yeah.
You're right. Because I tell him all the time, I'm like, dude, your friends are going to tell you stuff and it's not going to sound like anything I told you. And I just need you to know they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I said, who are you going to believe? The woman that you know writes about this and has this sex thing a lot? Or the kids your own age who you know have never seen a naked woman? And he went, I'm probably going to believe you, Mom. I was like, okay. I said, here's the deal. I do not mind you sharing what I tell you with your friends. I said, but you do have to understand that their parents might not appreciate it. So it's just understand that. Now, as for the kink part, this was quite by accident. Part of me is like, if I teach him to be open about anybody can love anybody and sexuality is really open and even gender is really open. And in the blog post we posted this week that goes with this episode, that was one of the, it was three different types of conversations we've had with the kids. And one of them was included a thing about gender. But the way I've sort of always looked at it is if I hopefully teach him to be really open and accepting of other sexualities and other genders and other identities, then he should be more accepting of different sexual preferences beyond like the partners, but the things you do, kinks and BDSM and fetishes and stuff. I have not gotten to the point where I can say the term, I think I've said the term BDSM to him one time, but I did not define it. I cannot bring myself to say kink or fetish to him yet. I'm not, me personally, I don't think, I'm not ready and I'm not sure he's ready.
Not yet.
But accidentally, and this is in the blog post, I managed to talk to him about kink and BDSM without ever saying the words, which is to me sort of another more proof that you can have these conversations with your own kids and not say things that really you really don't think you or they might be ready for yet. And it was the simple concept of if anybody can be sexually attracted to or like anybody else, they can also be turned on by anything else. And so in the blog post, I tell the conversation about how he thought he was being funny. Oh, what about a lamp?
Yes, yes, I remember that.
Right?
Yes.
And y'all know, I have said this before, everything's a fetish. Everything's a fetish to somebody. Everything's a kink to somebody. Yeah. And so I very confidently said somebody out there is totally turned on by lamps. Hot pun, not intended. But they're still turned on by lamps. And that we had a whole conversation.
Yeah.
And at the end, I was able to sort of reiterate that the whole thing about as long as you have consent and you're able to communicate with your partner, it doesn't matter if nobody else says they're into it. Nobody else has to be into the things that you're into. And I also like to always sort of in those conversations with, and don't tease or make fun of or be cruel to anybody who is turned on or enjoys or likes things that you don't like. That's not cool either. Now on the gender one, I do try to, like I said, gendered language, it's just, I'll check my privilege here. I'm a cis, white, mostly hetero woman. Like, I get it. You know, I'm trying, y'all. And so, but the gendered language does come out.
It's tough. I have problems with it,
It's a lifetime of retraining yourself.
Yeah.
But, so with him, my impression has always been that he's straight. He says that he's straight, but I know that your sexuality can be a thing that evolves over time because you don't know what you're into until you're faced with it, right? So when I talk to him about, you know, partners, and I never say that he's required to get married, I have put my order in for grandchildren, but I also add this little thing where only if you want to have children.
Right.
But no, really, your mom would really like grandchildren at some point. It's a joke in our family. I always say partner. I never even say wife or spouse because I want them to grow up knowing that they can love anybody. And marriage isn't required to me. Would I like them to be married? Yes, but I also don't want them to ever go through a shitty divorce. So I would rather them not get married if it means they don't have to go through this shitty divorce. Right. But he always kind of goes, Mom, you know I'm straight. And the cool thing, the really cool conversation, because I think it really did open his eyes, was I said, yeah, but what if you might be straight. I said, but what if your partner doesn't identify as a woman? What if they're non-binary? What if they're, you know, what if they just identify in a different way? And this is where I stumble because I don't always have the right words and language for it. But I knew non-binary. Because he understands binary. That sounds like a computer term to him. And so he gets it. And so I said, what if that's their gender identity? I said, I'm not going to presuppose that. It's whoever. And he goes, you could kind of see the wheels turn of, wait, I could really like somebody who, you know, doesn't present themselves as a girl. Like, you could just see it in his face. Like, that's a that's a thing that could happen. And see, with the youngest, he's really young. I mean, he thinks, ew, girls are gross. But so the oldest has been a flirt his whole freaking life. And I know you're not supposed to like sexualize your children. I know what a freaking flirt looks like. And I know the look on this child's face and I know who he gives it to. And it has always been women. It has not been men. Mm-hmm. It has always been, and usually very pretty women. I think he's got a type. And so he's always been this flirt where if a pretty woman smiled at him and was nice to him, the oldest just has this specific grin he gets.
Yes.
When a man is nice to him and smiles at him, he does not, I mean, he's not rude, but he doesn't react the same way. When it's an older lady, not the same reaction.
No.
Young, pretty women get this smile from him. His pretty much from the time he was like three. And so he's always been this flirt. And so I kind of was always like, yeah, he probably is straight. It's fine, whatever he is, but I think he might be straight. The youngest, he doesn't talk to people he doesn't know. He certainly is not smiling at them. He is not like his brother. So I have no idea. And it's kind of cool because I look at him sometimes and go, I wonder about you.
Yeah.
I wonder who you're going to be, you know? And I'm not going to talk to him about that yet because he's young enough. He doesn't have to figure out who he's going to be, you know?
Right.
He can come to that naturally. I'm just hoping he pays attention to the part where Mom always says, you can tell me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And with him, he's not diagnosed with anxiety, but man, if that doesn't happen one day, I'll be shocked. I always add, because he worries about these things, I say, there's nothing you can tell me that will make me stop loving you. Nothing. I don't care. Nothing. And so he tries to think of the worst thing he can think of, which he's eight, so it's really sweet. He's like, even if I call my brother a bad name, I said, baby, I will still love you. Right. There's nothing you can say. There's nothing you can do. I said, there are some things you might do that I won't be happy about. You know, if you do something wrong, yes, mm-hmm. I'm your mom. That's my job to help you know to do better. I said, but I will never stop loving you. And what I'm hoping is that that message sinks in. So if big or small, to him or to me, because our perception of things is so unique,
mm-hmm.
that he always knows he can come and tell me.
Right.
You know, and so if it is, mom, I'm queer, you know, meet my, and I'm Polly, meet my boyfriend and my girlfriend. They all use they as their gender, you know, their preferred pronoun or whatever, that he could just tell me that. Or if it's something else that has nothing to do with this. And that's the other thing I've noticed and why it's so important to me. When you talk to your kids in an open way about sex and kink in the terms that are age appropriate, right? And to do that, if you're like really feeling like, yeah, I get this, I'm with you, but how do I do that? It's taking the concepts and taking the language out of it. You know, consent is we don't touch people who don't want to be touched.
Right.
Sexually is when we usually mean it, mm-hmm. but when you're five, that's not what you mean. You mean we don't touch people who don't want to be touched.
Right.
Or you can love anybody. We're not talking about gender. We're not talking about sex. We're not talking about intercourse. We're not talking about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can love anybody.
Yeah.
That's okay. That you literally take what the con, you take the most general, the way I do it anyway. Other people will probably have other techniques, but the way we do it is I take the most general definition of what that concept means on a sexual level. And I present it in general terms. I take the sexual language out of it. Now that the 12-year-old is nearly 13, I'm putting the sexual language back in. I'm not shying away when I say I'm writing about a sex toy today, you know, and he's like, oh, what? And
then, oh my God,
I know, we get into a 5-minute conversation, not about specific sex toys, but this is what sex toys are kind of for. You know, this is what you could do with them in still in very general terms. Mm-hmm. Because I really don't want to be the parent who gets called to the principal's office because my kid gave the sex ed lesson at lunch or something.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Oh,
I am trying to avoid that. But that's how we do it. We take the what is it we're trying to get across to them that can carry them through any situation in life. Not touching somebody who doesn't want to be touched. That's just a good life lesson, you know?
Exactly.
That will get you through so many spots at mm-hmm. so many ages.
Right.
And then I have found that when I reiterate to them that they can tell me anything, I'm in my head, I'm thinking about it sexually. You know, when the day comes that you know who you like or who you don't or what you don't. I mean, I know it's fairly rare, but I also recognize he could, you know, the youngest one could be asexual for all I know. But the whole point is that I want them to be open people. I want them to be generally accepting of others. And that, to me, is how you create sex-positive and kink-friendly people. When you're mostly open to everybody and you don't look at anybody else's thing that's different from you as immediately bad because you don't understand it, you know, I don't expect them to understand these things as they get older if I'm not the one who's told them or they didn't look it up on their own or whatever. But if I hopefully, God, fingers crossed, instill in them this idea that you just accept people. They do it differently mm-hmm. than you and that's okay, you know, and especially if I can please get in their head, consent communication. If that's your criteria, right. then all you do is go, they have consent over there? They look like they're talking about it. Oh, I don't give a shit what they're doing. Okay, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Because then when you're faced with this, oh yeah, my roommate over here likes to tie his girlfriend up to the bed or, you know, tie their partners to each other or whatever, they're probably going to go, that's different. And they're going to have their own opinions and thoughts on it. But it's not going to be hopefully, and this is all pure hope. There's no way I cannot possibly know this. Hopefully they're not going to immediately judge it. Hopefully they're not going to immediately go, oh, that's different. That's weird. And that we fight that a lot right now because the oldest is at that age, the prepubescent age of trying to decide what's right, what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he is absolutely really judgy. And if it's different, it's wrong. And we spend a lot of time
talking.
And that's another way. We spend a lot of time saying just because it's different than what you're used to doesn't make it bad just because it's different. And that's my new thing to repeat. You know, to say over and over again.
Yeah.
Just because you don't understand it doesn't mean it's bad.
Right.
And I know, and I personally have not come across anybody like this, or they have not told me they are. But okay. I know that there is sort of a thread that runs through the overall BDSM community, not the loving BDSM community, not Twitter, not, but in general, like if you put all the kinksters of the world together into one giganto community, there's a thread that runs through that community of people who are very much against anything that's not hetero, that's not BDSM in a certain way, that's like DS in a certain way. They don't care about different genders. They maybe don't care about transgender people. They don't care. Like, they're not allies. Those people exist. Now, here's what I would say about that, because some people get very concerned if that says something about BDSM. I would hope that we could maybe over time open those people's hearts and minds. Or if they're going to be bigoted and prejudiced, we could tell them that that's not acceptable. And you're not allowed. I don't want to hear that from you, blah, blah, blah. All that being said, kinky people are people, and you get a big enough group of people together and you will always find that. We have not, we're not at a place in society where that doesn't exist.
Right.
So it's not a necessary problem in the BDSM community that is unique to the BDSM community. We're a community of people, and so therefore those people will exist. What I found in the time when it was brought to my attention that yes, those people out there are like that, and they're very much against anything that's, you know, much more open and much more like just accepting of, you know, whatever people do that's consensual, it did surprise me, because I thought, wait a moment, let me get this straight. If it was found out tomorrow that you like to beat your partner or your spouse until they bleed and have them call you filthy names, you'd lose your job, your kids, and your livelihood.
Yeah.
You're going to discriminate against somebody who, not that long ago, if it was found out they were gay or lesbian or whatever, and hell, if it was found out today that they were transgender, that they would lose the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I don't understand how you can be a kinkster and live on the edge like we do and live under not the same threat as people in the LGBTQ community, but a parallel threat of, if you are found out, this can happen to you, right? You can be ostracized from your family. You can be divorced by your spouse. Like, you can lose your kids. You can, all these things can still happen.
Right.
I don't understand how you can live under that threat and then not embrace another part of a community that lives under the same threat. We should be allies together. So, yeah. You know, I get that those people are out there. I understand it on an intellectual level. Okay, people like that exist, and so they therefore will exist within our community. But I don't understand it, because it shows sort of a lack of awareness about your own situation and how that can mirror somebody else's situation. And can't we be empathetic to each other's situations? Right. That being said, I personally have not come across it as a majority. Other people may have. It may be dependent upon where you live and what kind of overall community you live in. You know, if you live in a more maybe rural or area where that's prevalent. And I say this as somebody who has lived many, many years in both Mississippi and Alabama. So I'm trying not to say it, because I don't want to offend our open-minded Southern listeners. But y'all know what I mean. It's kind of that thing that a lot of us will go, yeah, I know, I'm from that state. I apologize on behalf of that state. Like, y'all know what I mean. But yeah, that's the simplest reason to educate your children is so that they are safe and they make better decisions and they don't learn about sex from porn, right? Like, I just, oh God, I think about that and but the broader implications are better society, better culture. You know, they never, hopefully they don't go through what we went through if they do discover they're kinky. I'm curious about the youngest, if he's a spanko. I can't call him a masochist. I'm not gonna give him that label. That's kind of creepy. He's 8, but he does not shy away from certain kinds of pain. Yeah, oh yeah, typical little kid reaction. But other kinds, that kid gets this grin on his face, and I think, I'm not talking to you about that because it's not appropriate, but I'm curious. I may never know because I'm as a parent, I don't need to know about my kids' sex lives. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I need to know that. But I might forever be curious. But the broader implication is if I approach it with openness and teach them to be open and accepting, I do better for the next generation. But also, if they do discover they're kinky, maybe they have less of the problems that those of us who are even listening now, when you discovered you were kinky and you freaked out and you wondered if something was wrong with you and your partner accused you of having something wrong with you and all these things that happen to different people.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't wish that on my kids. Nobody would wish that on their kids. Okay.
I'm slowly figuring this out after all this time. You're the ranter. I'm the storyteller.
Yeah. I'm the rambler and the ranter.
Yeah.
And
so,
yes, you are.
So I have a story to tell. All right. There is this woman here in our community, local community, very well known, very well respected, not just here in this area, but in other areas of the country as well. I was at the club one night, a number of years ago, and she was there and had her oldest daughter there with her. I believe she was around 23, 24 at the time. And she had, you know, over time, his daughter had, you know, talked with her, educated her. And you know, once she was old enough to understand, she explained to her daughter her lifestyle. And apparently the daughter was like, oh, well, I kind of have been...
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you do that? I've been doing my own reading. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And they were there at that at the club that night, and Mom helped her daughter negotiate a scene for the daughter.
Wow.
With a known, safe, and respectable dom there at the club. And I thought that was pretty cool.
It's funny. Looking at it from somebody else doing it, I think that's kind of cool, too. Thinking at it as a parent. Maybe it's because they are still so young. And
They're a far cry from that.
But I also think that just shows that some families and in some parents are perfectly happy to know everything about their kids' sexuality and to share their sexuality with their kids. And some aren't. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. I'm a firm believer that parents should have a freaking private life. And not just when their kids are too young. I mean, even when their kids are older. Like, I don't know about my mom's sex life other than that she has sex.
To me, it wasn't a sexual thing because it was a spanking scene that was being negotiated.
But you have to understand, from my perspective, as a parent, my submission is inherently sexual. It's all tied together. So for me, I'm stuttering my way around it. I could not do that for my children because it is a sexual thing to me. I find it fascinating. I personally think there's nothing wrong with it. I think it is another example that we will all do this differently. For some people are gonna be like me and go, no, I want them to have whatever they need. I don't want to know about it. And other parents are like, okay, no, we'll talk about this. And yes, in that, I'm not saying that what happened was a sexual thing, but when I put myself in that person's shoes, the conversation to me inherently becomes about my sex life because my kink is my sex life. Can I submit without sex? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I do it all the time. But when I start talking about submission and DS, for me, it's inherently sexual. So if I get into that conversation with my children when they're adults, I'm not sure I would because it's inherently sexual. Now, I say that now when they're so young, it's so far out of the realm of possibility. I don't have to worry about it and it's all theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in their, you know, early 20s and somehow a conversation comes up and whatever, it might be completely different. I might be an adult by then and maybe I'll be more mature, okay?
Okay.
Right now, I am not grown up enough for all that.
To me, I thought it was pretty cool. You know, it was her first time at a club, first time experiencing that, and she was able to walk her through in a safe environment.
And I do like that. It's another way of leading somebody just into the kinky community in a way that keeps them safe. You know, I cannot imagine doing it for my own child, but that's why I say that's the thing that sometimes people forget when it comes to parenting. We can agree on what we want the outcomes to be: sex positive kids, mm-hmm. educated kids, kink friendly kids, whatever, happy children, right? But our methods are going to be completely different. And that's valid. I'm not going to knock any parent who does something like that or talks very explicitly about their personal mm-hmm. sexual interests with their children or whatever age. I'm not going to knock any parent who does that. I'm going to acknowledge that that won't work for me.
Right.
And that's okay. What I'm trying to do is get to the same goal as that other parent.
Yeah.
Safe kids, happy kids, open kids, accepting kids. Sure. And that's all that matters.
There's different ways to achieve Absolutely. The same.
So I admire it in mm-hmm. somebody else. But I can tell you at least right now, when it's so far out of the realm, yeah. I'm not doing that. Which is, I think, the thing I want to end this on. I hope nobody feels like we've lectured. I hope nobody, mm-hmm. I certainly hope that nobody thinks we've told you how to parent. I do think that it's okay to give the free advice of, don't you want kids who are healthy about their sexuality? I think. If we're all being honest with ourselves, we do all want that.
Right. I mean, just like what the things we talk about with kink, you know, it is not the one true way.
No, and there's no one true way about parenting. And I am certainly not telling anybody how they should raise their children. Mm-hmm. If you use any technique we use, great. If you have your own techniques, great. If you think, if it's sort of like hearing that story about the mom who helps a daughter negotiate their first seat, you think, well, that sounds great for you, but that's not for me. I'm not there yet. That's fine too. Okay. Y'all, my children did not pop out of the womb and I was immediately talking to them about sex. They were, God, the oldest would have been 7 or 8. Oh, he would have been 7, almost 8 when I discovered my own sexuality. So mm-hmm. for the first several years of his life, I'm even worse stumbled my way through it because I knew I had the, I don't want to do it the way my mom did it because I didn't work out so hot, but I did not know anything. Mm-hmm. So if he had asked a question, and if he did, I don't remember it anymore. I didn't even have the language to use, right? Yeah. You want to talk about stumbling through something that if you don't even have the words, you don't know what to say, right? So this wasn't something, I am not preaching from a point of, oh, I have always been this way. No. I one day... This is in the past 3 years since we've lived in this particular property we're living in now. Okay. So from like age 9 or mm-hmm. 10 to now, the oldest, I mean, it dawned on me one day that, oh my God, what I waited for was my kids to be curious about sex. I was like, oh, if they get curious and they ask, I'll answer anything. And then I realized I do not have children who are curious about those things, or at least a child, the oldest. The youngest wasn't curious. And now he doesn't have to be because he just always seems to overhear those conversations with his oldest brother. There you go. That's how we do that. And so I had this epiphany. Yeah, that's the word I want. Sorry, y'all. We're recording not late, but late enough. I was like, if they don't ask, when the hell am I supposed to tell them this stuff? Mm-hmm. And that's when I had to take the initiative to just start talking about it slowly, carefully. Yeah. So I don't want anybody to think that I think I have all the answers. I do not. I do not want anybody to think that I've been talking about this to my children for years and years. Nope. However you come to it, if you are a parent or you want to be a parent, you come to it in your own way. I think as long as you're open to the possibility and you're mindful of it and you're thinking of it, the opportunities will present themselves. You don't even necessarily have to go looking for them, but sometimes you do. I had to go looking for them. And the method you find is whatever works for you based on your personality, your comfort level, your knowledge. You know, if you're honest with yourself, if you have gotten to a point in your own life where you are like, fuck, I'm kinky, I'm in a DS relationship, or I want to be in a DS relationship, you're already exploring your own relationship styles or power dynamics or sexuality, depending on how you identify with your DS and BDSM. So you're already gathering information, and some of that information can be filtered in age-appropriate ways, in the way that works for you, in the way that works for your kids. Everybody's kids are different too. So I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I happily share what we do, because if it can be of use to you, please use it. But if all you get from this is the idea that that should be the goal, I do believe that. I do believe that we should all have the goal that our kids are better about sex than we ever were. because I know very, very few of us were any good about sex at any point. Until now. Maybe now you're better at it. But come on, we all have those moments. And we all, I'm sure, if we think hard enough back, can find a moment where we either said something that we learned later was blatantly false about sex, or one of our friends told us something. But either way, we believed it. Why? Because nobody ever told us any better. True. Nobody ever had those conversations with us.
Very true.
So I don't care how you have the conversations. I don't care when you have the conversations. I don't care what language you use. I don't care how open or even not open. You know, you got to find your way through this in the way that is best for you. But I do think we would all have that goal, and we should all have that goal.
Mm-hmm.
Because God, can you imagine if this world was more kink friendly? If the world we live in right now was more kink friendly, sex positive? I mean, it wouldn't fix every problem we've got, but Jesus, no. We'd have at least a few less things to fuss about and argue about with each other.
True.
So that's my ranty, rambly / John Brownstone storytelling thing.
There you go.
For this week.
All right.
We do have a bonus section. Yeah. Hopefully my voice will hold out, because mm-hmm. I can feel it.
You heard it cracking a few times.
Yeah. The sore throat's really kicking in. But we do have some things to go over.
Okay.
So, yeah, we won't be here for episode 135. Will not be the very following week. So please, nobody panic. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who are like, oh, thank God, I might be able to catch up on some episodes. I totally get it. I'm always like, when my podcast that I listen to,
yeah,
they're like, oh, we're on hiatus. I'm like, oh, God, thank you. I can get through these episodes now. So, yeah, so we'll be mm-hmm. back, and yep. we'll have more stuff. I do want to say, because this is one of those topics that tends to bring out people's strong emotions and opinions, mm-hmm. as always, we welcome them, as long as nobody's an asshole. be friendly and polite. We don't have to agree. You can have a different way of doing it that is completely different from ours. That's cool. And I would like to hear other parents' techniques, because mm-hmm. I don't think I do it right or perfect. It's just the way I have found. So
there are other things that we might not have considered.
Exactly. And, you know. And since I am fumbling through a lot of certain things like, you know, language and words and stuff. Yeah. If anybody wants to share how they're doing it with their own kids, or they did it with their kids, please
do. We try our best to be open and talk to them as age appropriately as we can, but we don't have all the answers either. So even we welcome, you know, ideas and things from people who have been there.
And I think that for those of you who are terrified that maybe you shouldn't talk about it because you'll say it wrong, the intent really does. The words always matter. I'm not a writer. I can't tell you words don't matter. Of course they matter, but it's your intention that really does make a bigger difference. You're gonna, like me, I don't want my language to be gendered. And when I write, I do a pretty good job because I can edit, right? Mm-hmm. But when you speak, you can't edit. And so it's something that I'm still working on. You're gonna think you're saying things wrong. First of all, your kids aren't gonna know you're saying things wrong. Second of all, as you learn more, you'll evolve and you'll get better at it. And so then you'll speak to them differently and it'll be fine. I promise you there's not a pop quiz. And I assure you that your 5-year-old or your 10-year-old or even your 15-year-old's not coming back to you in 30 years and go, Mom, do you remember the day you said her instead of they? No, they're not. As long as you're trying and you truly are just trying to teach them openness, you'll fuck up how you say it. It's okay. We all do. Okay. Even the people who are really good at it now did not start out that way, I'm sure. So it's fine. Start where you are and fumble your way through it, and really mm-hmm. you'll be okay. I really believe that.
Okay.
Okay. So we
good?
I'm done lecturing now.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. No, really. I'm ready now.
Okay.
Keep it kinky, y'all. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Unless, of course, you're listening to this after the air date, and then, you know, you'll hear the next one whenever you want to, as soon as you can hit play. Sorry, am I talking through the bar? I'd blame it on the cold medicine, except I didn't take it.
No, you didn't.
Daddy got can I talk to the crickets now? Can I be forgiven because I've slept about the equivalent of 8 hours over the past 3 days?
I suppose.
Thank you, Daddy. Oh my God. So if you just heard a jiggly sound, the chair just hit the mic. I don't know what that does to your sound, and I won't go back and listen to it to find out. You can tell me later. Okay, so we did get mail this week. We got amazing mail from the UK from our friend Amy of Coffee and Kink. Yeah, with a name like that, you knew she was our friend, right? She was our friend, even if she would be our friend even if she didn't call herself Coffee and Kink. But that is how she got my attention, I think, the first time I met her online. I was like, oh, Coffee and Kink. Yes, I'm here for that. And it was a wonderful, wonderful package. There was a card. We Instagrammed it. So if you follow Loving BDSM on Instagram at that handle I hate, you'll get to see a picture of it. And in the card, she was like, yeah, coffee porn. I was like, yes, this is coffee porn. It is wonderful. And I loved it. But then she also sent us actual coffee from Great Britain. And do y'all want to be called Great Britain? Do y'all want to be called England? Do y'all want to be called the UK? Somebody from, because I alternate, I just, whatever comes out of my mouth. Somebody who is from the UK, from the England part of UK, please tell me what you would prefer that I say, because I say one of the three. Like, I just alternate because I don't even know. But so here's the cool thing. So it was ground coffee from a local coffee shop place that she loves, which is awesome. And it was in an envelope to protect it and be part of it, right? So I open up the outer envelope and I smell the smell. And we got worried. We're like, oh my God, I can tell what this obviously is before I even open up the envelope because you could smell it. I'm like, oh, we always open up mail in the bedroom. And am I about to spill something all over the bedspread? So we ran, we got a plastic bag to carefully take it out of the envelope and then transfer it to the plastic bag. And because I'm a klutz from hell, there were like a few light coffee grounds that got on the top of the bedspread. But neither of us was really mad about it. Like, we wouldn't have been mad even if it had spilled, only that we had lost coffee.
Abuse.
Right, coffee abuse. But it was like, oh, so now our bedroom's gonna smell like coffee too? Was that the night we had sex? Because if that was the night we had sex, maybe that was why part of the reason I was so turned off. The smell of coffee in our bedroom. Freshly ground
rub
coffee.
Some coffee grounds on me next time. See if that works.
Better, like, then brush that shit off. I don't want that kind of friction. That's not the good kind of friction. Coffee grounds rubbing between our bodies. No, that does not sound pleasant. So, yes, it was a wonderful, wonderful piece of mail. And I know we have more coming because somebody, messaged me and said there was mail coming. And I've been checking the mail obsessively.
Yes, you
but
have.
It has not arrived.
So have I, actually.
And now we're about to be gone for a week, so it could be sitting there when we get back. That's okay.
But we'll be running to the mailbox when we get back.
I'm sorry, we can't go home after this 12-hour car ride. We have to go check the post office. There might be mail. And you know how Kayla feels about mail. Which clearly that feeling is so strong. Amy sent international mail so I could get mail.
Yeah.
And that's yet another reason why I love her.
And that coffee was so good.
See, I haven't had a cup of it yet. It was. It smells delicious. Oh, it smells amazing.
Tastes even better than it smells.
And you're starting to drink black coffee now, too. I have totally corrupted you on this being healthier thing. Yeah. I like it, but it's weird.
I know.
Like, you know, this is not a knock at any type of coffee or non-coffee drinker, but in my mind, rightly or wrongly, there are people who drink black coffee, and you can't tell. It's like anything else. You can't tell when somebody drinks their coffee black or doesn't. But in my mind, there's a type of person that drinks black coffee, and then there's a type of person who has cream and sugar.
And I don't strike you as the black coffee
person. No, my stepfather drinks black coffee. And it's one of those things, and please tell me I'm not the only person, not about coffee, y'all, but about anything, where when you find out somebody fits this mental picture you have of that type, you go, yep, I knew that. That totally makes sense. There are people when they go, oh, I just like my coffee black. I always go, in my head where they cannot hear, yeah, I knew that. I somehow I knew that. And you were not that type of person.
who are you becoming, John Brownstone?
I've gone to the dark side.
Clearly. I thought we were already there, although I've been waiting for my cookies.
I'm going to say, while I have not embraced the diet like you have, mm-hmm. I've joined in on this diet. I've realized that I have not been as healthy as I really could be.
No, and you're doing that stereotypical guy thing of you blinked real hard and you lost 10 pounds. And I'm begging for a pound to go away.
I have pretty much, at this point now, totally cut out sugars.
I know, we have so much sugar in our house. I don't know what to do with it.
But I have. I've pretty much cut out sugar. I have cut my carb intake.
I know, and you're the Italian who loves pasta and bread.
I know.
Like,
that's
quintessential Italian on that.
The pasta is like the one last...
That's your kryptonite.
Yes.
That's totally... That's the thing. Yeah. Like, you can go a whole week and you'll eat, a moderate amount. You'll eat maybe a sandwich over the course of like 5 days.
Yeah.
You'll have healthy carbs where it's fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be pasta night in our house.
I've totally given up potatoes. I haven't touched
potatoes. Yeah, because I don't eat potatoes, so that makes it easier, yeah. But that's the thing.
But yeah, on pasta night.
On pasta night, it's like three plates. You are like...
But I don't eat three plates anymore.
That's true. You eat a plate and a half, which is an improvement.
Yeah.
It is an improvement. So yeah, and it's working for you.
It's working
You're
well.
You're slimming down all over the place.
Since we got back from London, I have lost 14 pounds.
I know. And see, here's the thing, y'all. I don't like the idea that anybody might think that what we're trying to do is, that we think that thin bodies are better than fat bodies, whatever. No. We took a good look at our health and our fitness levels, and we knew for us that where we were weight-wise and strength-wise and stamina-wise was not good for our kinky fuckery, for our ability to go to a place like London and have a good time, all kinds of stuff. So for us, it's not...
Kayla was in pain while we were in London. Sure. I was in pain.
We couldn't... I mean, we walked, but good God, we paid for it.
Yeah. I for my height and body type, I'm carrying much more weight than I should.
And it's upsetting your back.
And
it upsets your knees.
And it has been upsetting my back. That has been a big aggravator. Just since losing this 14 pounds, I have noticed a big drop in the pain in my back.
Exactly. And you are able to get on the floor and get back up again.
Yes.
You can bend over and tie your own shoes.
Yes.
There are things that are positive and nothing to do with what your body looks like.
No.
So I want to kind of put that out there. So yeah, I act like I'm this poor thing that who's not losing weight. You've lost 14. I've lost 11 pounds. I don't see it, but I have lost it. So
I see it.
Thank you. I'm hoping my mother, who has not seen me since the London trip, sees it. Because you know how it is. If you are trying to lose weight or get fit, you can't see it. And your partner usually mm-hmm. can't because they see you every day. So then you have to who hasn't seen me in a while? Can you please tell me? Can you see a difference? So the other thing we do want to talk about, it's not much to talk about yet. And the former paying members of the Loving BDSM community know about this already. So
mm-hmm.
If you have, did not have a monthly fee payment with us, we didn't tell you yet because mostly we weren't ready to tell most people, but we did, we did notify the people who were paying us money. So the community side of Loving BDSM is actually in the process of being rebuilt. Dom Signs messaged us a couple of weeks ago. It was I promise I really am working on this. He's busy and we're a side project and I'm happy to be a side project. It's fine.
Right.
I don't want it to sound like, oh, he's taking forever, because that's not how I look at it at all either. But what was happening was, because I had hoped that the community being down would be a really temporary thing, I kept all the paid stuff up.
Right.
We made that decision. We would keep doing the video content we were making for paying members, because if I was going to accept somebody's money, I was going to give them what they paid for. But it was wearing me down. Not the work. I mean, sitting in front of a camera and talking mm-hmm. to people about kink is that's rejuvenating. But something about it was wearing us both down. And we decided to turn off paid membership, because that's the mechanism of that was separate from the community website. and not charge people money in exchange so that we did not do the video content we had been doing. And this is not video content on YouTube. These were the live streams, the munches, the Dom and Sub meetings, all that good stuff. And so we pretty much gave ourselves a pay cut of the money that we were receiving. It was pretty cool. It was, you know, enough to pay like all the hosting and all the expenses we have running all the different sites we have and all that stuff. So we did that a few weeks ago. And we know what we think we want to start doing next. But the reason I'm not making an announcement about that is because we actually, during our vacation, are going to take a couple of days away from children, away from the dog, away from family, away from everybody. And maybe we'll get some, we're going to stay at a hotel to do it. And maybe we get to have some hotel sex. I would appreciate that, quite frankly. And we're going to figure it out. And we're going to sort of unplug from everything for a solid day. 24 hours, you know, one night in a hotel, you know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to map it out. And we're going to say, what are our goals? What are we actually trying to accomplish? What are we actually trying to do? And how do we want to do it? And what, and for, I don't know if anything will drastically change, or we'll just get clarity and we'll finally get to start on the goals we were talking about at the beginning of this year. Like, I don't know. I'm trying not to have any expectations, but our hope is that when we come back for episode 135, when we're back for vacation, in the bonus section, we will say, this is what we're going to do. And these are the things, and we've mapped it out, and we know we can actually make these things happen. What we know we're going to do is the fact that we're not accepting paid membership right now, or any membership, because there's no community live as of the day we're recording this. Not necessarily the day you're listening, but the day we're recording. The expenses didn't go away just because we turned off the payment and the mm-hmm. paid membership. So we are encouraging anybody who wants to be a part financially of anything we do to be a Patreon supporter. Right. That's patreon.com/KaylaLords. I did learn I can change that from /KaylaLords. I don't know what to change it to. But I learned I could change it because we want it to, right now. If you go to my Patreon page, it's all me, and it mentions Drum Roster, but it's not about Drum Roster. Part of what we want to do with the Patreon page is rebrand it so it's really a reflection of both of us, because we both benefit from the financial support we get from patrons.
Absolutely.
So right now, pledges are as low as $1 a month. There are perks at higher levels, of course. But right now, I'm actually doing a private patron only podcast of old blog articles. Mm-hmm. And I let certain patrons at a certain dollar level vote on what they want to hear each month. And lately it's been a lot of my old BDSM and DS and kink writings from early, early in my blogging life, like back to 2012. And I think I might have gotten, somebody wants to hear something different, because I think we're actually in the poll for next month. It's might be erotica or whatever.
Ah.
We'll see. But what we're going to do, this is one thing we are sure of. On Patreon, for people who want to support both of us, whether it's you guys as a listener or just anybody else on, you know, through the website or whatever, we are actually going to do a bonus section once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Through that patron only podcast. So it won't be kink education, it won't be that kind of stuff. It will be 15-20 minutes of us talking.
Yeah.
And we're gonna try and focus more on the behind the scenes stuff. Right. What are we planning? What are we working on?
Kind of a look
on?
Behind the curtains.
Right. Like what is John Brownstone building in a shop that nobody knows about yet? What's Caleb been writing about? What are some topics coming up?
Yeah.
What are we doing in this world? And as always, it'll be the two of us chit-chatting and cutting up and being silly.
And having a cup of coffee.
Damn straight. That one will only come out once a month. The blog posts for my archive blog posts that I'm recording, those are twice a month. So it's three little podcasts a month. Mm-hmm. They're very short. Y'all would not believe this. I put out an episode that's like 5 minutes
long.
It really does happen, y'all. It really does happen.
I had to look twice when I was editing that for you.
I know. It was. So that's what we know we're doing. If for those people who have any desire to support, and maybe you've already purchased all the paddles and canes you can, there's only somebody you can own, there's only so many asses in your life, or you've done other things. I know there are people who listen who've bought all my books, which is, right. I appreciate it.
It's a wonderful,
so many
yes.
levels. But for those who want to contribute to this thing that we're doing, because the more money we have coming in, the more we can do, the more contributors I can pay. We do have to get on the stick about our freaking, you know, hiring an actual virtual assistant. Yes. That has not changed. We just haven't done it.
And that's something that when we go away next week, we're going to talk about.
Right.
And I may be picking up the reins on that.
You're going to have to at this point.
Yeah.
But so you know, you can be a part of that and you get something for that. And you get, you know, more access to us. I really do want to make my Patreon page more active. Pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. Behind scenes, nothing sexy, y'all. Don't get excited. But, you know, pictures of when we're recording and where we're at and what we're doing and, you know, stuff. And then, yeah, the extra podcast each month. Again, it won't be kinky educational stuff. I'm not going to put that behind a Patreon wall, but it will be us. So if that's a thing that interests you, and I'm doing this in the bonus section because if you're here, I assume that you might be interested in that.
Yeah.
And that is as little as a dollar a month.
Right.
And it's not like a contract thing. Like, you could sign up for 2 or 3 months and go, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Then you stop. I will have to remember to actually link to that in the show notes page for anybody who wants it. But that's part of what we know we're doing. But we were thrown completely off when the sites crashed earlier this year. We had so many plans. We were like moving forward. We're going to London. We had all these things going on. And then it just all fell down around our ears. And I had many, many long nights where I was like, what am I doing? Is this a sign that I should even be doing this anymore?
Right.
And so we've got to sort of regroup. And
correct.
We've got to figure out what all of the things we're doing, because we're doing so many other things. Not Loving BDSM is the biggest thing we do together, but it's one part of the things we do.
Correct.
So we've got to kind of get our shit together.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, probably not this coming week, but at some point, we also have to renegotiate our DS.
Yes, we do.
We talked about that ages ago, if anybody remembers. We've still never done it.
No.
So we've got to do that, too. That might be an episode on its own once we do it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got something to talk about. So there's stuff going on. This is actually, I have been working truly like 14, 15-hour days, maybe even a little bit longer, so that I can take all of the next week off.
Yes.
I still have work to do. We stop recording. It's like 10 o'clock now. I still have work to do.
Yep.
So,
and you're going to stay up and work, and I need to get to bed because 4 o'clock in the morning.
We're waking up tomorrow.
To be on the road, because if we don't beat rush hour traffic out of town.
You'll be a very cranky daddy.
Yeah.
So with that, the episodes we do right before we take a break are always really long.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say goodbye.
I know.
But y'all, we love you.
We do.
If you become a Patreon supporter, great. If you don't, we still love you, okay? I've said this multiple times. You are valuable to us as human beings, regardless of whether you put money in our pocket. That's not how this works, you know, for us.
Right. Y'all that listen and, you know, tell us how much, you know, the things we've talked about have reached you and you know, helped you and along your own journey.
Many a message from a cricket has pulled me out of a very like bad moment where I was questioning everything I was doing. Like, what is my purpose? Why am I here? Oh, here's a new message. Oh, they're so kind. Aww. And then I feel better.
Yep.
So, there's stuff on the horizon. There's stuff going on now.
There is. So, some of it we're gonna hash out as much of it as we can next week. And
squeeze some hotel sex in there. Because it's a hotel room.
You're
required. I think you were morally obligated to have sex in a hotel room. If you're, I think that's just required. And I think you also have to get kinky and loud, because who's going to care? You don't live there.
Not a damn person.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So,
and room service will pick it all up in the end.
House cleaning will
house
pick
cleaning.
It all. But we will order room service. We got a hotel specifically with room service. So we don't even have to leave our hotel room. Uh-huh, I know.
All right.
Okay. We're going to go now while we dream of those things. So we love you guys. We did so good the whole show. We didn't talk over each other.
No, we didn't.
Now we're talking over each other.
Anyway, we do love you. Thank you to all of you out there listening, you're wonderful.
And we are going to miss you, but it's only a week. And we are not going dark next week. So we're online if you want to chat.
Yeah.
It will be, I will be hard pressed to be on FetLife because I don't access that from my phone on purpose. It's just a me thing.
Yeah.
So if you message me on FetLife, give me a few days. It'll be a while. But Twitter, DMs, stuff like that, email, you know, you can always reach us. We're here. Yep. Bye.